Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast. I'm David Staples of the Cult of Hockey. I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy of the Cult of Hockey. Welcome, Bruce.
Good evening, David.
So as I see it, Bruce, this is the year of doing nothing in the summertime for the Edmonton Oilers, which is probably a real misnomer because actually what they're doing is the most important thing they're ever going to do with the franchise, which is McDavid's second contract and Drysdale's second contract. But it does seem to me like it's compared to the drama of the summer before and the drama, especially of last summer, that it just seems like not a whole heck of a lot is happening, that the Oilers are really going to go into next season with a team which is very similar to the team they ended up with. And they're counting on internal growth of all kinds of young players for them to either keep pace or improve. And I actually think that's not a bad bet myself. I'm not upset with the way it's going. I think they had a hell of a team last year that could have won the Stanley Cup, but for a few terrible referees calls, and that will be the only mention of it, Bruce. We're not going to rant and rave, okay? Let's make a pact. You're shaking your head.
Not saying a word.
Okay, you're agreeing then. I thought you were shaking your head that you are going to rant, but it's okay if you do.
I'm just shaking my head over those calls still. And okay. That's all I'm going to say.
So do you get the same sense that they're, I mean, it's pretty clear now, nothing much is going to happen. Do you think they're going to do anything more? Like in terms of, they might have one small defense signing, maybe one false small forward signing. Does that seems to be the most that's going to happen? What do you think?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of room. I mean, they got obviously business to do with Draisaitl, and that's going to drive next year's salary cap to some degree in terms of how much space do they have left to do other things. And then, of course, they have that big one hanging over their head, like the Sword of Damocles, you know, that's in 2018, that they know they're going to need to make space there. So going all in and incurring cap overages and stuff like that this year would be a big mistake. So he's got to play it a little bit careful. And so far, we're seeing some of that.
Yeah. Let's dig into the first point on the agenda, which is McDavid and Draisaitl contracts. And when I started to take a closer look at it, I'd been hoping beyond all hope that McDavid would sign for $9.7 million a year. And I had that in mind because of Crosby's $8.7 million a year. But the second you look into it, even for a second, you start to see that that's just a fantasy. That's not going to happen. So one of the ideas which was firmly in my head, and I think in the heads of many Oilers fans, is that we hope that McDavid will pull a Crosby. And what that means in our minds is that he's going to take a lower salary in order for the team to be able to compete better for the Stanley Cup. Because that's what we all have in mind. That's what Sidney Crosby did. But when you start to look at Crosby and make that comparable, what you see is it's a very complex situation, this pulling a Crosby. Because we're actually talking about two different contracts, which were both at $8.7 million per. But one contract, his second contract, was for 5 years.
Right.
And when he signed, it was actually a high percentage of the Pittsburgh salary cap, 17.3% of the $50.3 million cap at the time when he signed. And the equivalent contract for a five-year deal for McDavid would be $13 million based on that. So if McDavid was to pull a Crosby based on that moment in time, it would mean a $13 million per contract for 5 years. By the next year, though, when that contract actually kicked in, which is the same mechanism, which we'll see with McDavid, he'll sign now and the contract will kick in. The cap then rose from 50.3 to 56.7, which in today's terms, what would the cap be? It's at 75. Now, what would it be next year if it went up by the same percentage, Bruce?
It would be about 84 for sure. I mean, it's more than 10% it went up in 2008 from 2007. So Pittsburgh, basically, they got Crosby at the old cap ceiling rate, and all of a sudden they had an extra $6 million to work with. So that worked out pretty well for Pittsburgh the first time.
So if the Oilers were to sign McDavid at what pulling the Crosby and signing him in for that $13 million 5-year deal. The cap would have to go up that much for it to work the same way, because by the time it kicked in, Crosby was only taking 15.3% of the cap in Pittsburgh, and if McDavid were to take that, his contract would be $11.5 million over 5 years. Uh-huh. So that's a very different contract than the 13. Now, there's also the McDavid contract from 2013-14, which is a 12-year deal, also at $8.7 million Crosby. And when that kicked in 2013-14, the first year of that contract, it was only 10.1, excuse me, it was only, what percentage of the cap was it? 13.5% of the cap, of the NHL mm-hmm. salary cap. So if McDavid were to sign a similar contract to that, it would be $10.1 million per, but it would have to be over 12 years, and he can't even do that. Like, it's not legal. You can only go 8 years if you're the home team. So pulling a Crosby is kind of a messy, it's not as simple as you think. Bruce, do you think, here's the points I want to make. The maximum salary is $15 million. On an open market, Connor McDavid would get $25 million a year. So I think he would get $25 million a year, at least, might get more than that. If he gets $15 million a year over 8 seasons, Bruce, I will be doing handstands with happiness, because he's worth every penny on a certain level. You know, he is such a great player. Anything less than that is a win for the Edmonton Oilers. That's him taking less than what he's worth. And I think the key for the McDavid camp is for people, Oilers fans and NHL people, to acknowledge this, not to freak out if he gets $13 million or $12 million or whatever it is, for us to have a real understanding that anything less than $15 million is a huge win for Daryl Cates and the Edmonton Oilers and Oilers fans.
It's a hometown discount, eh?
That's right. So let's first acknowledge that, because that's where his first ask, according to Darren Dreger, is $14 million. So already we should be happy. Oh, it's like he's already given us a discount. So anything less than that is even more of a discount. And I think it's important. I just think from what that agent and what McDavid are thinking, that people give him credit for that. Everyone likes to get the credit, and this would be important credit.
You're satisfied that he's proven enough in 2 years to be worth the absolute maximum amount available, and anything less than that is a bargain.
Yes. Are you? Okay.
Well, he's pretty good.
It's funny, because some people are really old school. He hasn't won a cup yet. He shouldn't. And you know what? Actually, if you're really old school, you'd say he wasn't even that good in the playoffs, because Drysdale outplayed him in the playoffs, and McDavid was good, but he wasn't.
So maybe they'll have to give Drysdale 16 then.
So all that said, what I'm hoping is, actually, I do think that there is a real problem, and I guess I don't know if star players should bear the brunt for this or whatnot, but it seems they do. And if one player does take too much of the cap, that does represent a real problem for a team winning in the modern NHL, because it really is a team game, and you need all kinds of players getting paid a reasonable amount of money. So what I'm hoping, I'm kind of actually hoping for now a shorter-term deal, a 5-year deal, where he takes less money. And, you know, what that amount would be, the lower end is about $11.5 million for pulling a Crosby over 5 years. That's kind of what I'm hoping for. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. What about you?
I'm hoping for 8 years, $97 million. 12.125 million a year. I'm hoping that he leaves a little bit on the table. That's a little bit of optics. I mean, there's money to be made. If it's all about money, and I don't think it is with Connor McDavid, but let's start there.
Yeah.
But even if it was all about money, you can make money outside of what they pay you. And, you know, a famous player like that is going to get lots of endorsements. If he's on a winning team, that's going to help him. So also, if he's seen as being a selfless team first player, and one of the ways that people interpret contracts these days. It's that way. If he took the maximum that he possibly could, there's going to be people saying, look at that greedy guts. He's more concerned about making the most that he can than it's having a good team. And I'm not saying it's fair. I'm just saying it's a thing.
And yeah. So here's what Ryan Rashog has today on it. And I like how he words this. I'd guess, he says, I'd guess. And he doesn't put guess in quotation marks, but I would. I'd guess 97 to be in the range of $13 million on an eight-year deal. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Rashog is one of the insiders. And these guys, they don't guess. They couch, they protect their sources and pretend they don't have sources and protect their, you know, information by postulating things that may or may not come true, but have an... Depending on the record of the insider, and Rashog is behind only Stauffer in insiderness, maybe in Oiler world. Maddie and Rashog are pretty high up there. So if he's saying $13 million on an eight-year deal, that really gets my attention. So what is that worth? That's Bruce. Is that your figure is a little lower than that?
A little bit.
Okay, but that's close. That's in the range.
I mean, if Sid went for 8.7 because of his number thing, I figured 12 for 97. I mean, that's a lot more than 8.7 million. It's 12 million plus a year. So it's in the range in terms of the percentage of the cap. It's on the
that's
other
104
hand,
million over the term.
That's what Sid's was. Yeah, 104 million over
well,
12.
Well, that's what this would be 104 over 8, would it not?
Yeah, 97 over 8 was what I was saying, but 13 would be 104 over 8.
Yeah.
So it would be Sid's contract for two-thirds as long, same net value, and as it turns out, the cap is 50% higher in 2017-18 than it was in 2007-08 when Sid signed his contract. So 50% more one way, 33% less the other way. Basically, it's the same percentage. It works out the same.
The bottom line of that contract is that it, in comparison to Crosby's contract, it puts the Oilers at a competitive disadvantage in terms of the salary cap, in terms of winning the Stanley Cup. Crosby's going to take less of the cap, and if they're similar
right.
players, that gives
Absolutely.
Pittsburgh an advantage for the next mm-hmm. however many years, as long as Crosby's a really good player. But I think that's where we're headed, and I don't think Oiler fans are going to freak out too terribly much, do you?
Crosby's pay went down this year. Last year he made $12 million in actual salary. This year it dropped all the way to 10.9. And, I mean, he didn't really do that much this year. You know, all he did was win the World Cup and the Stanley Cup and the Rocket Richard and the Smythe and the World Cup MVP. But really it was kind of a mediocre year for Sid, you know.
Hey, so I see Spencer Fu chose Calgary, eh?
Yes.
And that makes perfect sense. And good luck to him in Calgary. I don't begrudge him that decision at all. And I hope Oiler fans are keeping their cool about this because, you know, he was a free agent. He had every right to go wherever he wanted. Mm-hmm. And things are pretty crowded at right wing on the Edmonton Oilers right now with Zach Cass. Let's talk about the Cassian signing, Bruce.
Yeah, sure.
What did you think of that?
Due diligence. It was probably a pretty easy negotiation. I mean, the Oilers had the hammer of the, you know, the restricted free agency, so he wasn't going to be going anywhere. They did protect him. And I was kind of anticipating a two-year extension, maybe 2.25 or something like that, to get a third year and to have the whole thing come in at under $2 million. That's a good contract. I mean, he's not going to get paid like a 35-goal scorer because he's never going to be one, but he's got game and he brings stuff to the Oilers that they need, and he's become part of the what I call the face of the Oilers in terms of being, you know, out there delivering the physical play on a nightly basis and playing with skill. I mean, if he was just a banger, then that would be way too much. But he's got...
Sounds like you've finally forgiven him, Bruce.
He's gotten some skill. Well, it's taken a while. It still kind of sticks in my craw what happened there with Gagne.
And
but,
fair enough. And fair enough. You know, I think it's a...
But
Cassian
he's
probably
a
had
player.
A choice of... He probably had a choice of 2 years at a bit more money. And I think...
Maybe.
I suspect he... Good for him making the right choice here. Like 3 years is... That's a good deal Really good deal for the Oilers. I mean, he's a strong third line player. He's been consistent ever since he got to Edmonton. He's been good and getting better. So he can skate. He can make a play with the puck, and his hitting and his intimidation factor is just right off the charts. So yeah, that's I'm glad with that. He was a key player on that team, and it would have been a huge hole. Like in all the scenarios about Vegas that we went through, and when people thought about, some people were open to Cassian going to Vegas. I just thought that is nut job thinking. You do not when you're actually building a team, a group of individuals who are going to strive together and compete together to win the Stanley Cup, and someone becomes that critical to the whole operation, you don't just cast aside a player like that for, I don't know. It's like rotisserie league thinking, and it didn't make any sense to me. So I'm glad to see him back.
Well, one of the things that Chiarelli did from day one, he said, we're going to get bigger and meaner and be harder to play against. And then he went out and he acquired a big, mean, hard to play against winger for each of the first three lines, which after years and years of stacking players like that on the fourth line and leaving them on the bench for most of the game, they can actually put out now. And they just come out in rotation, one after the other. Lucic, Maroon, Cassian. Lucic, Maroon, Cassian. Good luck with that other team. There's always somebody out there that's either, going to run somebody or, if
And on the
stuff.
fourth line this year, we might have Jujhar Khaira.
Oh,
So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. There's never any shortage of muscle on the fourth line. That's never been the problem. It's always been that top nine that's been a little bit of a weak link in terms of.
speaking of tough guys, Bruce, Eric Greiba, one of our favorite, the Cult of Hockey's favorite tough guys, certainly one of mine, and I know one of yours.
I like crying for plenty.
I like him plenty too. He's signed to a 2-year deal. Like, now this is the kind of deal that the Oilers are going to need times five on the roster for all their bottom pairing players and bottom line players. They're going to need, and Kyra signed this low contract. Now Greiba has 2 years at 900,000 per
I know.
9 million. Greiba is he has surprised me because not only is he a really ferocious hitter, but he moves the puck okay. He's a solid enough defender, and he in a third line role at least, he gets the job done, moving the puck just fine.
Yeah, he's a 6'7".
Yeah, he is.
And
Seven six.
he actually had this year he had a small minus for the first time in his career, but he actually was a positive possession player. And for the amount of ice time a third pairing guy plays in 40 games, there's going to be some variance built into that. But for 900,000, in a way it's like a no lose if it's under the magic number. The 1,025,000 now used to be 950 that they could bury in the American League, and now it's with the salary cap gone up, that's boosted to 1,025,000.
Isn't that sweet? Yeah, to have
We
players like that.
you can send that guy down, and if he clears waivers, his contract is gone. If he doesn't clear waivers, well, guess what? His contract is gone. If he's on your team, 900,000 out of 75 million for 1/23 of your roster. You might get a guy a little bit cheaper, but you're not going to get a guy 29 years old, 250 games of NHL experience for 500 or whatever the minimum is now. I think it went up a little bit too, 650 maybe.
So I
So
hope that the Oilers get a couple more guys like that on, like veteran players on defense, on like and to fill out the roster. I actually think Mark Fain will be in competition for that
Oh,
until
sure, of
Sekera comes
course.
back. It'd be nice to get some value off of Fane's contract, and I think in a third pairing role, he might be okay. So, keep him away from the top four. Thank you very much. But in it's a and Greib is the same way. Keep him away from the
Yes,
top four.
absolutely,
But the
absolutely.
Oilers will go into the season, I think, with five players capable of playing in the top four, at least competing for those jobs. So that means as when one of them gets hurt,
Yeah.
will it be five that I just yeah. So we'll have Klefbom, Nurse, Larson, Benning, and Russell. So that's the five. When Sekera
Right.
comes back, that's six. So they have six. If they're all healthy in the playoffs, that's not a bad six
That is
defensemen.
their top six. That's how they play most of the playoffs, is with that same six.
So they'll have five guys competing for the top four, and then they'll have Fane and Gryba, and hopefully one or two other guys, and that'll do it. Works for me. I haven't heard a peep about Jordan Osterley, unfortunately, because
No.
I think he's a good hockey player, and I hope they bring him back, but I don't think that's happening.
So I wrote a post today about the defense, because I mean the fact is that now they've brought back Russell and Gryba, they have stuck with the defense they had last year because the other five guys are under contract, right? I mean Davidson was sent out at the deadline, and from then to the end of the season, it was seven guys, and all seven guys are now back under lock and key for next year. And the only kind of extra guy out of that with NHL pedigree is Fane, and nobody else. And I mean, maybe they're going to sign someone else. So I wrote a post just reviewing, as you know, we've been doing poll questions as we
So what are
review the
the
players'
what are the
performances.
res poll respondents saying, Bruce?
The poll respondents are saying they really liked how the defense played last year. This is how you parse this question is critical, and I kind of blew it in my original headline that I had to
Well,
fix.
don't worry about
But
that.
I'm not too worried about it. I'm just saying that the fans were happy with the defense that played 2016-17. Adam Larson rated the top at 8.1 out of 10 and over 2,000 votes.
Wow, 8.1 out of 10.
Yeah, I was surprised that the support was so strong. I was pretty sure people would be happy with the team. Oscar Klefbom, 8.0. Matt Benning, battling Matt Benning, 7.6. I think he outperformed expectations by the most. I would not say he was better than Andrei Sekera, 7.5, but in that ballpark. Chris Russell, 7.3. I mean, people were pretty happy with that. Gryba and Nurse, the last two, 6.5, 6.2. So even the
Was
lowest guys on the scale
Nurse
got
6.2?
Nurse was 6.2.
Oh, that's interesting. I would have had Sekera. It's interesting though, because these ratings are not just for the regular season; they're for the whole body of work.
Presumably, yeah.
And I
People,
think that
well, people
Klefbom,
voted.
and there's recency bias at work as well,
Oh, sure.
obviously. So I'm not surprised that based on the playoffs, because Sekera had an okay playoffs, but Larson and Klefbom especially were fantastic in the playoffs. Klefbom has never played that well before, and hopefully he can continue doing that. So yeah, I would have
So,
thought Klefbom might have won based on his playoffs. I thought he might have won, but it's I really love the way Larson played this year. Man, did he
He's
ever
got
help
lots
this
of
team
fans.
filling that huge void in the top four D with him and Russell in it. And in terms of the things that went right for the Oilers this year, Bruce, and made them a winning team, there's McDavid, there's Talbot, but those two defensemen filling that hole in the top on the right side, kind of next on the list for me with team toughness.
Well, anyway, that was for last year. And the article kind of segued into, well, Shirley's now re-signed these guys and the old gang is all back together again. But that's Shirley's planning for next year, right? I mean, sure, that it's based on
But
last
none of
year's
these guys
results,
are
but
too terribly old, Bruce. There's
this is going forward. And of course, the big issue is Sekera out. So
Yes.
I added a new poll question at the bottom of the post, which says, heading into free agency, are you satisfied with the state of Oilers' defense for 2017-18? Same
Okay.
set of guys. And the answer is no. Cirelli still needs to upgrade this offseason at 53% to 47% saying, yes, it's a good group. They'll be fine once Sekera gets back. So it's almost split, but it's not like 80-20 the way the poll results were.
It's a
It's
little.
people want to see more.
Well, the problem is is that good use of polling, Bruce, or bad use of polling? Because the only thing I would say about that poll is it's a little. We don't know if people mean, well, yeah, they need to bring in one more veteran bottom pairing guy, or are they talking about do they actually need another top four D-man, like a
Yeah.
major reshuffling? And that's what we don't know.
Yeah, I wanted to keep
Because
it
it's pretty,
as
they do. I know, then
a
I'm
yes or
drowning there,
no.
but I wonder how many people are thinking, because I think you and I would both agree they need to bring in another guy or two.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many people, and there still are people who think the Oilers need to have a major reshuffling and bring in a Jason Demers or a go for a Tyson
Tyson
Barrie.
Barrie.
Yeah. There's just
His
not the
name keeps
cap
coming
space,
up.
Bruce, when
No, I know.
you
The
dig, you start to
die is cast.
look at McDavid and Draisaitl's contracts. When that 13 million, it's going to be 12 or 13, right, in there. When you start to think about that, there's not a lot of wiggle room. And you have all these other players. You get up to 40 million really fast just with RNH, Lucic, Sekera, Klefbom, Larson, Russell now.
Surely had two guys he could talk to before July 1st, and he signed them both. And for better or worse, I mean, the Chris Russell contract, a lot of people totally despise the contract, and it's rich, and it's 4 years, and there's lots not to like about it. But the fact is that he played in the top four role last year and provided some shelter for the emerging younger guys, and he's back, and now we see they like him. So.
And the other fact is that they're not signing Andrew Ference at age 34. They're
No.
signing Andrew Ference at age 30.
Closer, yeah.
Much that's a good comparable that's as good a comparable player as I can think of, actually. In that Ference is a really small guy, but really tough, a great team player, and a great skater. Ference was an okay player between the ages of 30 and 34. He missed games every year because he played pretty physical and rough style for a little guy.
Russell missed games last year.
Yeah, so Russell's. I think we're gonna. I wouldn't be surprised. My reasonable expectation would be that we're gonna get that kind of 60 to 65 game season out of Russell each year. But he's going to give his all in those games and be an effective player in 90% of them with a few stinkers thrown in. That's what we saw this past year, I think. And that's what I expect we'll see again. So is that 4 million? Ference didn't earn, I don't think, that same percentage of the cap in those years.
Right.
He was a little less. We
Three
all would
point
have
two
been
five.
happy, I'm sure, with a little less going to Chris Russell.
Yes.
I really like the fact, though, that the contract was top loaded, and that essentially the last year of the deal is pretty easy to get out of, relatively easy to get out of. Teams do get out of those kinds of deals all the time. He'll be able to go to a team, and they'll only have after July 1st in the last year, we'll only have to pay him 1.5 million for a 4 million cap hit. So if you're cheap and you want to. If he's still a decent third pairing kind of defenseman, that's the money in the range for a third pairing guy, but you get to the cap floor with his 4 million. So
Right.
I think he may well be movable at that point, but maybe not. Maybe they won't have to. Maybe he'll still be okay because Ference was in that final year of that of his deal. I think he did. He helped. He
Was
got the
in
Bruins get
Boston.
to the Cup final that year.
Yes,
They win the
2013
Cup
they
that
made the
year.
finals. No, they won the President's Trophy and they lost the Stanley Cup final to Chicago.
So I didn't love the deal, and
No,
I'm
no.
a little worried that they've blocked Benning and Nurse. I'm still worried about that. But
There's not
him
much
being
room
there
to
will give those
maneuver.
other two guys less of a chance to move up, which is also a bit of a problem. But hey, the Oilers really needed that defensive depth last year to get through the season, and they needed a top four defenseman to come back, and so Russell was their choice. They didn't have to pay anything other than his contract to get him. They didn't have to give up a first and a second like Calgary did for Hamonic. There's something to be said for that. So I think the fans voted something like when we asked them, do you think that's a win for the Oilers? It was like 53-47 on that trade.
Same thing too,
And
yeah,
that's
it's
kind
very
of my feeling
close.
on it. I'm kind of 53-47 on that trade, on that signing. I like it. I think it worked out. And then I think on the Eberle thing, they were like kind of like, as I recall, 60-40 or something like that in favor of the Oilers getting a win out of that deal. And I'm kind of 60-40 on that one too. These it's not those they're those weren't slam dunks, either of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, my outlook is a little bit. We wanted to get a management team in place to run the team. Give them some room to do what they're going to do and let them run the team for a while. And tearing them to shreds and ribbons every time they make a move, I don't see what the percentage is in that. Let's see what kind of team they put out on the ice and how well they perform. This past year, I was pretty impressed. It was, as I was joking with Dennis King today, we were talking about Groundhog Day. I was talking about how 2016-17 was when Bill Murray finally woke up on February 3rd at the end of the movie. And he's got Andy McDowell, who wakes up next to Andy McDowell. And everything's all great, right? Well, we didn't quite get to the Andy McDowell phase, but we did get, we got out, we finally got to February 3rd. And February 3rd looks pretty good out the window after all those Groundhog Days in a row that were the last 10 years for us. Holy moly.
Oh, it sure does. This team took such a remarkable step forward, and there is a lot of angst and anger right now.
Yeah, a bit too much of it for my mind. I mean, the team got better. Why the default rage at everything?
Well, you know, my point is, a lot of it's on Twitter. You can stay off Twitter quite easily, but if you want to follow other news, that's hard, right? Because that's the place to be. So, but just, it's really easy. Just mute people. You don't have to listen to anyone. You don't, if you don't like me or if you don't like you, Bruce, they can just mute us forever. They never have to hear us again. You can even put our name in that thing where you block words, I think, and you just never see them at all. Or you can unfollow people, and you can even block people if you want to go that far. So there's a really simple solution to anyone complaining about the negativity. And I've really taken advantage of it myself. Just mute people, and makes life. You don't miss much. You don't miss them at all, is what you find. You forget all about them, and they're constant griping and complaining. So, there's my advice. So, let's deal with the last item on our list, the draft.
Oh yes,
Kyler Yamamoto, Bruce. No player in the CHL who is draft eligible had more points per game than Kyler Yamamoto. He was number one. Let me just find my chart here. I've got charts. I've got a spreadsheet. I can prove this. His level of scoring, Bruce, and I include, when I do this calculation, I include their playoff scoring. Yamamoto didn't make the playoffs because I want a bigger sample size for points. Right. As big as possible. He was at 1.52 points per game in his draft year. Neil Yakupov, who went first overall, was at 1.54 in his draft year. Players in the same range as Yamamoto: Nugent Hopkins 1.5, Pierre-Luc Dubois 1.5, Ryan Strom 1.49. Jakub Voracek 1.55, Robbie Fabry 1.55, Sam Bennett 1.56. When you get to the top of the list, you find Sidney Crosby at 2.65, Connor McDavid at 2.52, Patrick Kane 2.38. Sam Gagner, yeah. 2.13.
The top three kind of has delivered the goods. So, hey, all three of them have been scoring champions in the NHL after that kind of production in junior.
Gagne's a cautionary tale, though, right? Like a
Gagne's number four, then that's your first cautionary tale. Yeah. The other three nailed it.
They sure did. Then after Gagne, you have Jonathan Drouin.
Gagne played with Kane.
Yeah, so. We have Jonathan Drouin, Mitch Marner, and Matthew Tkachuk, the next three. Mm-hmm. Man, Matthew Tkachuk, that may haunt the Oilers, Bruce.
That's a nice number.
That really was a nice number. When you look at some of these players, like Tanner Pearson was at 1.52, and he's become a really good NHL player. And you do just wonder, like, how did he drop? I think he was 30th. Yeah, 30th overall. How did that happen? You know, he really scored the heck out of the puck in that last season.
Was he an overager?
No, he was.
There's something odd about him.
He was in August 92. So
And he got drafted in...
I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe there was something odd.
I think it was his second time eligible, and that's always a red flag that'll push a guy down, and also pushes draft your numbers up because he was 1 year older.
Maybe there's something that I didn't factor in there. So I also looked at smaller players, Bruce, and how they had done, and you know, Nugent Hopkins, a smaller player who had the similar level of scoring, and he did well. Nico Hischier is actually a smaller player. He's 176 pounds. He was at 1.48 points this year. So Yamamoto outscored him. Now, Yamamoto is, he's the smallest of the small, right? Mm-hmm. But there does seem to be in the NHL right now, they're drafting all these small players. So they're small players on defense. Cale Makar got drafted really high. He's not a big guy. So there does seem to be a place for the small man. Kane, Mitch Marner, Nikolai Ehlers, Jonathan Durant's not a big guy.
That guy in Calgary, what's his name?
Johnny G.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have him on my list because Johnny Hockey wasn't a CHL player.
Johnny B. Hockey. Yeah, Johnny B. Good.
He is a good hockey Johnny player. Good. Yeah. So there's B a few there's a few really guys who stand out those real failures. Nicholas Patan, who's off to quite a bad start of his pro career for you know, being fair minded about it. Even
though there's a graveyard, a little
1.61 in his, you know, he outscored Yamamoto considerably, and he certainly hasn't done anything. And Yakupov, smaller player, who certainly has done nothing at the NHL level. So we'll see. But I really like the pick. I love that pick, Bruce. You get the top scoring guy, and I love it partly because of where the Oilers are. They have two centers that you could play him with who are both big, fast guys that can make plays. So he can combine. You could have a smaller player combining with, like, you know, like Håkan Lubb did with those big Flames forwards.
Right. Get the right combination.
And they also have, anytime he's on the ice, he's going to either be with probably Lucic or Maroon or Cassian or some guy like that. So, you know, for a team like the Oilers especially, I think there's a role for a player that size.
Yeah, well, when you say small, I mean, Nail Yakupov was like 184 pounds when he got drafted. Kyler Yamamoto measured out at the draft combine, 5'7.5", 146 pounds. And apparently he's officially the smallest guy ever drafted in the first round in the 49-year history of the NHL drafts. So he's not just small. He's really small. And of course, there have been small players that have succeeded in the NHL, but a lot of them came out of nowhere. Martin Saint-Louis.
He's taller than Bobby Tyler Lalonde. Johnson.
I don't think so, but I don't think Bobby Lalonde was the first round draft pick. So, you know, but you're hoping to find that exception. And certainly with guys like Goodrow, who was a fourth round pick because he was small, and even Mitch Marner, who's a little taller, but he's a little wisp of a thing at 160 pounds. You see that kind of just pure elite skill, and they can get around in this league, especially if they can skate. And the word on Yamamoto is that he's an elite skater. So that's a really strong point in his favor.
My main question about his combine numbers, Bruce, is why couldn't those stingy bastards give him that extra half inch?
Yeah, well, you know what else he did at the combine was he cleaned up in the various physical tests. He was in the top five and no fewer than six of the 14 things, including number one in the infamous VO2 max test. And he's quick, and he, you know, his athleticism really showed through at that combine. So hopefully there's something real about the, you know, the elite nature of this guy that he can overcome this. I don't want to say physical shortcomings, but you know how it is in the NHL. It's hard for little guys out there, and they need to be elite to do that. And Kyler Yamamoto, 99 points this year, the most of any draft eligible player in any league, and as you said, the most points per game. So
yeah, 99 points, and the Oilers ain't wrong.
22nd overall, you know, like it's not like they were picking top three for a change, so.
The Oilers also drafted a number of other players, which have you seen any of those guys ever play, even once?
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I think I saw Skinner play once about 2 years ago with Lethbridge.
So that qualifies you as an expert.
I can't say as he really made much of an impression one way or the other. You know, it was a Lethbridge versus Edmonton North Wild Kings game. He was one of the players out there, but I'll be out watching them next year. You can count on that, and we'll see
Yeah, but
what we
we have to
got.
rate these players in our prospect, our annual
Oh,
call to
yeah.
hockey. So I might actually go on the old internet and the computer internet and watch some of their games if they were in the CHL. People seem to be reasonably happy with the Oilers draft picks this year, people who actually study this and do watch these players. I've heard some good things about them. About the Oilers draft, so we'll, fingers crossed. Of course, it's something that we don't really know anything about, but it's crucially important to the franchise. This is going to make all the difference to the Oilers in the next 5 to 10 years, just as it does at all times, how you draft. And but it's just, unless you've seen these players and watched them this year, you just have no idea. I mean, this past year, I didn't watch it. I haven't watched any of the guys they drafted last year, so gonna have to watch some games that they played. I know that Benson was hurt; he just had surgery, and Niemelainen had a pretty weak year in Major Junior, and he's going back, I think, to Finland, if I'm not mistaken now. So we'll see.
Yeah.
What are you looking up
And
there?
I'm just looking up Lethbridge and realizing that our man Stuart Skinner there, I saw him in the playoffs this year. I went down to Red Deer to watch a game between the Rebels and the Hurricanes, and Skinner was the netminder, and he played a good game. And I wasn't specifically scouting him, but that was a game. Lethbridge eventually lost in double overtime, but there was some pretty good goaltending at both ends of the rink. That's one game, anyway.
So we're left with, it's interesting, Bruce, because the day of the draft, I had forgotten it was coming. Like the draft used to be the highlight of the year for Oilers fans for all
Of the
these years.
year, the
It
draft
truly,
lottery, and then the draft.
I didn't even remember it was on. It seemed kind of an anticlimax watching it. I was kind of happy that Yamamoto fell to the Oilers because he did seem like he fell. And excuse me, but it's this. I just wonder if this is what it's like with a winning team in the modern cap era, where not a whole heck of a lot happens at this time of year. Because for the Oilers, they were always bringing in two or three players in free agency. They were always making a trade. The draft was huge. Like, this was the big time of year. But it seems like right now it's just about over for Oiler news.
Eberle for Strome, that was the one big trade
That
that
was the
happened. Did
one
we talk
big
about
piece of
that?
news. No, we haven't, and I haven't watched. My next on my to-do list is to watch Strome play some hockey games and really focus on him as a player. And I think, Shirelli gives very accurate assessments of players when he trades for them. And he was saying it's just a smart, cerebral player, good with the puck, good vision. So I think we can, and then we when we combine that with his point totals, we kind of have this incredible sinking feeling about him.
Yeah, if you got if you're
His
that
point totals are
cerebral,
so underwhelming.
you get that cerebral and you get 30 points. I mean, I'd hate to see it if he wasn't.
If he was a dumb hockey player, he'd have two. Yeah. Well, we'll hope.
Anyway.
Fingers crossed. Eberle didn't tear up the P patch last year. He got 50 points playing a lot of the time, 400 minutes with Connor McDavid, lots of power play time. I don't think that it's going to be impossible to replace between, if Draisaitl on the wing, Nugent Hopkins on the wing, maybe Kujula, Puljujärvi, Strome, maybe even your cat, Bruce. They're going to figure out a way. They will figure out a way to replace 50 points. As astonishing as that sounds, that's my bold prediction.
Eberle, boy, he sure went up and down and around in the court of public opinion. He went from being let's get rid of the bum, get you know, keep retain some of his salary, just get him out of here to what? That's all we could get for him. We should have got Hamonic plus a pick. You heard any number of sort of wide range of things, and it's a roller coaster being a fan. Let's put it that way. And I've gotten to the point where I'm almost inured to these trades. I've seen so many favorites leave town. I mean, Jordan Eberle, he was the one guy left from when I started with the cult of hockey in 2010, our first season, I mean, our first game where you and I were working together was a game where Everly went dangled around the Calgary and put that backhand up over Kiprusoff and goal of the year. He won goal of the year in the very first game. Now, there's not one single Oiler left from that 2010-11 team. Not even one player left. Like, the entire team is turned over. I think maybe Kevin Lowe is left in the organization, and that's not many more people in the, you know, certainly the upper echelons of the organization that are still around either. They've turned it all over. I guess Cates is still part of it.
Is this your way of arguing to bring back Curtis Foster, Bruce?
No. Maybe Sam Gagner. We could use a right shooting power play specialist on the fourth line. He could do some of whatever.
What if he'd come back here? I wonder if he'd want to. Because he got a rough ride here, but you know, things change. He had a good year on the power play, and they could use a. I'd rather have him than Strome, but again, I haven't watched Strome play, so maybe I'm just that. Maybe that was just an out to lunch comment. I will reserve judgment on Ryan Strome till I actually watch him play. You know, 5 games. How about that? And really focus on him and see what his skill set is, and then I'll come back and have an opinion.
Sounds like a plan.
Bruce, and in the meantime,
oh, and in between we time,
we're
done.
We've been talking for 3 hours. Three hours. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to do one quick shout out to Coach Claire Drake.
Okay, do that.
Getting elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame after all these years, 88 years young. A lot of people have been putting forward a lot of, and he's a very unassuming man, you know, and he's, I think, more touched by the efforts of the people that he knows going to bat for him than possibly by the honor itself. But boy, does he ever deserve it. Talk about a guy that's, as Ken Hitchcock said, his fingerprints are all over the game. And if you look at some of the names of the people who signed the testimonial letters in this Hall of Fame application, which I happen to have a copy of, it's not just in the game, it's people all around the community, like and very, very strong citizens who were touched in a positive way by Claire Drake. So,
and you know what, Bruce, as was I, in
uh-huh.
I do this, as you know, I break down the video of plays and try to figure out what's going on and who's contributed to scoring chances and who's made mistakes on chances against. So Claire Drake, I invited him over to my house. I was, wow, you know, hoping to get his take on, you know, what I was doing and to learn a little bit about hockey from. So we went through a game and sat down and I soaked up his wisdom one afternoon. It was a fantastic way to spend an afternoon. And that's how you learn about hockey is, and that's the great gift that Drake has given to a generation of Edmonton coaches and hockey people, is sharing his knowledge and wisdom in that way. And so fantastic that he's been recognized in this way.
You look at the coaches that are speaking out positively for him. Today I heard on the radio Ken Hitchcock, Mike Babcock, Billy Moores. I know Barry Trotz is another disciple from that school. The whole gang at Hockey Canada, Tom Rennie, Jerry Fleming, Harry Kern, Melody Davidson. I mean, Drake, they call him the coach's coach. And he coached coaches, and he also coached a damn fine team for 28 years. And he also, unbelievably to me, he has one degree of separation from the 1920 Canadian Olympic champions and the 2014 Canadian Olympic champions, 94 years apart. And Claire Drake has had personal connection with the superstar Frank Frederickson of the 1920 team, who coached him in UBC in the late 40s.
Wow.
And with Mike Babcock and his crew of coaches that won the Olympic gold in both 2010 and 2014. It's just staggering. It's almost a century. One man.
It's interesting about Trotz. I didn't know there was a Trotz connection. You know, the funniest thing, I don't think I've ever heard Barry Trotz interviewed, and then I heard him. He was on some panel. And from looking at the guy all these years, I think I pictured him as some kind of mafioso or something, like a caveman in
no
a suit.
Trots.
He was the most thoughtful, articulate coach I think I've ever heard. You know, McClellan's really strong. Trotz was amazing. So appearances
Well,
can be
that's the Canada
deceiving.
West. That's the Canada West map. Yeah, I mean, even McClellan, he had some experience at the University of Saskatchewan in his developmental time. So there's a lot of that. And at the core root person of all of that, and Dave King, George Kingston, on, list goes on and on. But Claire Drake is the sort of the overarching figure of that whole movement.
Claire Drake, the teacher, now in the Hall of Fame. Way to go.
Deservedly so. Congratulations, Coach Drake.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We actually have been at it for 50 minutes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Bruce, for talking. And in the meantime, and in between time, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast. Boop, boop.